Welcome to Nuanced Judaism, coming to you from OU Torah.
I'm Simi.
And I am Rivka. Hi, welcome back.
All right, so Rivka, what did you want to discuss? What idea did you want to focus on in today?
So we wanted to discuss something to do with relationships.
Because we had a plug from Aubrey Hirsch.
Exactly. So we wanted to...
jump in on that.
Exactly. And I decided to go into one of the more intense topics of codependence. So a lot of people have spoken about codependence, which is just in short, it's when you are in a relationship where your happiness is dependent on the other person, where you'll be taking the slack if they messed up. You'll be making excuses for the other person. You won't be able to make decisions without the other person. Essentially, your happiness, your functioning.
So your feeling of individuality, of worth.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. Your individuality, your worth, your day-to-day functioning is very much tied up and enmeshed with the other person.
Okay.
Whether that other person is healthy or not, but it's not a healthy relationship either way.
Okay. So you're saying you can't, it's the focus on the individual being able to stand apart from dependence on others.
Correct. So that's what codependence is.
And that's a bad thing.
Correct. Now, in the first, before we even start, you can ask the question, well, wait a minute, we're married. Judaism clearly does not put being a lone wolf on a pedestal. Even our rabbis are married, have children, etc. So why is codependence a bad thing? Aren't we supposed to be in a society dependent, etc.? So what do you think?
Well, I was going to say, even you can relate to our relationship with God as being in some way codependent.
There you go. It's dependent. Now, codependent, the way it's currently described in psychology, is when you don't feel like you have an identity besides for that other person. That would be codependence. Whereas interdependence is when I still have my own sense of self. I can go out on my own. I can be happy on my own. However, we have decided to partner up for a greater good, for an idealistic purpose, for a job, for romance, whatever it is. And we greatly need and want each other. However, we still retain our identity. Think about it like a Venn diagram. You still have your bubble, I still have my bubble, and then it merges at some point.
Ah, I see.
But you still retain your own identity, your memories.
It's an interesting theological point. I don't think every branch of Judaism would agree with you
there
that's
you
your relationship with God.
That's why I specifically said, and as you said it with God, I was like, okay, I specifically have to say with another person you have codependence, because certain branches of Judaism would say that you don't have any persona except for God.
The ideal goal is the destruction, I mean, not that I believe this for a moment, but the destruction of the ego in what they call unio mystica or something, where you attach to the one with a negation of the self.
Correct, and that's a certain branch flavor of Judaism. So even though, whether that floats your boat or not, codependence is specifically to people with limitations, and usually the person you're codependent on is not the most healthy cupcake in the world. There's a reason why certain people become codependent on other people, but this is what we're going to discuss in a minute. But what I wanted to focus on is kind of two things. First of all, what leads us to become codependent? And you don't have to become codependent to your spouse. You can become codependent to your boss, to your coworker, to your roommate, to your friend. But why do we become codependent? What do you think? Why do people lose their identity to another person's story?
An undeveloped sense of self. When a person, I suppose that the logic would be, I think it was Freud who said, you can never be a person until your father dies. Because the idea being that when you first time you find out that you're, that the people you looked at and worshipped aren't as perfect as you thought they were, you gain a certain sense of not self-esteem, but you individualize. If you never break out of the fact that there are people who are above you that are perfect, your sense of self will always be hampered. In which case, if your sense of self is always hampered, you'll be looking for the next person to, I suppose you could say, complete you.
Fair. I actually know that at certain times, someone makes a drastic life decision, either to become religious, to become not religious, or whatever. And it's interesting how a loss of a parent or a loved one right then actually had to do with it.
It's into the dangers of the cure of movement on, like, either undeveloped or emotionally vulnerable people can be really dark.
Right. That's why as educators, you have to encourage independent learning. It can't all only be your charisma.
Interesting.
I would even say
that's something you put in the description.
Yeah, I would even say it's unethical to be only charismatic, and that being the Torah that you're teaching. You have to show your sources. You have to show that this is, I'm quoting other people. I'm quoting text.
The encouragement of independence in learning.
Yes, you have to. Otherwise, what is the Torah for a newcomer, that one person? That's not a good thing.
Wow, fair.
Either way,
what was your view?
I 100% agree with you. And I think that the more you know yourself and the more you can learn to respect and love yourself, then you'll have what to work with. Your story begins in the journey to emulate God, in the journey to become a better person. And it doesn't take, and that's your journey. And not being taken all your time is taken up on other people's journeys. Because we sometimes have a bit of an obsession to try to control things that are not controllable. As soon as you try to control something that is not controllable, exactly then is when your pain and suffering starts. If you want to know where your anger is, look at your expectation. If you want to know where your pain is, where your suffering is, look at something that you were not able to control. I just had a baby. Thank God we are holding our snoring infant in our arms right now. But one of the things I focused on when giving birth is there's pain, there's contractions, and there's pain. And then there's suffering. The suffering is the worry of how long is this going to continue? And will I get the help in time? And will everybody be... All that is suffering. And the pain is the pain. So as soon as I was able to let go of the stuff that I cannot control, I had an amazing birth.
So you're saying the pain... Sorry to interrupt. The pain is entrenched
with... Is life.
Because it's... But how you relate to the pain...
Is the suffering. Or not. Or lack
so is it relating to the pain as being meaningful?
That yes, that will get rid of the suffering, which brings me to
what's the relationship between independence and codependence?
Because
when you develop yourself to having a mission and having a purpose, mm-hmm. thereby you're less susceptible to being dependent on another person's mission.
Correct. If I'm codependent, I spend most of my time and most of my emotional energy focusing on how do I save you. How do I control even? How do I worry about you? Can I change you? No. I can manipulate you and I might have success. I might not have success. Essentially, I cannot change you. Thereby, I'm going to live pretty... I'm going to not live such a happy life because I'm dealing mostly with things I cannot change. Whereas if I know myself and I'm going to try to change myself, guess what? I may have some painful things in my life, but I will be able to do something about them.
I see. So you're not only talking about the causes of codependence, you're also talking about the outcome. The cause of codependence is looking at your value and your mission as being external to you. Because if you looked at it as being internal, then you would be an individual.
Just
you would
not
be
even individuated. Focusing on the mission, but yes, yes.
Oh, sorry, I thought that was your whole point.
No, you said it even better, that my mission is outside of me. I would say that most people who are codependent aren't thinking about their mission. They're just worrying about other people.
It can be a mission on it. It doesn't have to be, I don't know, climb Kilimanjaro. I mean, it can be anything.
Yeah.
It
just means a sense
of purpose.
And now you say also the outcome.
But also the outcome of codependence is a suffering existence.
Yes.
Why? Because the entirety of one's being is beyond one's control.
Exactly.
It's the worry.
Which is the definition of suffering. Suffering is?
Loss of agency.
Yes. That is suffering.
They say when they speak about the noble truths of Buddhism, to translate life as suffering, by a neuroscientist called Jonathan Vivekki, describes that we shouldn't call it all is suffering, because that's clearly a lie. But to look at suffering as the loss of agency, though, that can be everything if you don't integrate life correctly.
Look, we are all, part of the way we're built is almost like an immune system to the world's suffering. If we were really aware of what's happening in the world, we wouldn't be able to function. We would just sit and cry. So a loss of agency in the world, there's only loss of agency. We're not able to control anything in the world, but we have to have a certain sense of who are we and who's the world, otherwise we can't function. But on a smaller scale, us and one other person, not the entire world with China and Africa and who knows what, but us with one other person, we also have to know where are they and where are we.
Okay.
Now, there's one other point, is that, and I just really enjoy this. I'm going to put the rabbi I got this from in the description below, because I really enjoyed listening to this just now. Codependence will not happen if you have an adequate sense of love and respect for others and yourself. That sounds like a simple sentence, but let's break it down. What is love and what is respect? And the way this rabbi brought it as an example is like this. You have a husband who's driving back from work, and he's really tired. He just wants to go home. It's been a long day. His wife calls him and says, honey, could you please pick up some milk before you come home? And he doesn't ask. He doesn't complain. He just goes and buys milk, even though he's tired. That is an act of love. I went out of my way. He went out of his way to do something for someone else. Beautiful. Great. Another example. You have a guy who's driving back from work. It's a long, hard day. And his whole day, he was fantasizing about the ice cream bar that he was going to buy himself when he finishes work. He's on his way to the store, and his wife calls him and says, honey, please come back right away. And he doesn't go and get that ice cream. He goes straight home. That is an act of respect. Love is when you go out of the way. Go out of your way for someone else. Respect is when you get out of the way for someone else. When your ego gets out of the way for someone else. And that is such a cool way of saying it, because he said what he was saying is that respect has to come before love. First, you need to be aware of that other person's boundaries, of where they are, what they need, and how, and where I am, and where I need, and how I can make room for them. Then comes the love, where I'm actively giving to them. And even in children, you see this. You can say, wait, but children, there's no boundaries. Was there boundaries in children? Yes, there is. When a child is playing Lego, and you and I have a very strong opinions on this, so I really like this. A child is playing Lego. You don't just grab him up and hug him and kiss him. That's a break of boundaries for him, a break of respect for him. He was playing Lego. He doesn't want to be hugged and kissed. You could wait until he finishes his Lego, give him a big hug and a big kiss, and show him that love. Snatching up a kid is love without respect.
Okay, that's the cool split, but play it into codependence.
Now, codependence might have a ton of love when I'm going out of my way to give to them. But in a counterintuitive way, by being codependent and only flowing out and spilling all my care, my worry onto them, I'm not respecting their boundaries. By me just giving and giving and giving and worrying and worrying and worrying about them, I might be enabling unhealthy behavior. I might be just not respecting them enough and showing them I'm not respecting you enough to find your own way. I'm treating them like a baby.
So it's actually counterintuitive. I like the way you phrase this, but it's counterintuitive because often you think of the one who's dependent, the object of their dependence is bad. With the way you're playing it now, it's not the victim blaming, but it's putting the agency back into the victim.
Correct.
Rather than the whole story of suffering in a codependent way is based off lack of agency. The explanation you're giving is that obviously that abusive situations have to be dealt with in a serious way. But a situation where you can find yourself being codependent on someone through no fault from them, the agency might lie in you to have healthier
reclaim boundaries and
respect the other more.
Yes, and also, obviously, how do you get to respecting the other more? By loving and respecting yourself, knowing your boundaries, giving things to yourself, going out of the way for yourself, getting out of the way of yourself. So, for example, someone asks you, can you drive me to the airport? And you don't really want to spend your day driving someone to the airport that you don't even know, you can just say no without having to give them a detailed schedule of why you can't that day. No, you could just say no. You know your boundaries. If I find myself over and over again upset at the lack of somebody else's response to me, or that the response I'm getting is not what I want, the answer might be more in me than in changing them.
Interesting. Okay, so let me maybe kind of end it with a bit of a Jewish flair to it.
Sure.
So we discuss, and it's relevant to this week, the Korban Pesach, which is a bizarre thing to bring up in this case, I do know. But the aspect of sacrifices that Judaism does sort of jump in on, without calling it a sacrifice per se, we call it a Korban, is that somehow you're drawing yourself closer to God by uplifting something of your own to God.
Well, yeah, and Korban comes from the word korov, which means close.
Right. But what I think the important point is that after the sort of foundational Korban of the Jewish people, you eat it afterwards. Putting veganism to one side, you're taking that uplifted aspect of yourself and you're not losing it to God.
You're enjoying it.
Yeah. It's coming, you are receiving it again on that higher plane, if you will. And that is so key, in my opinion, to Judaism. It's not about the negation of the self. It's about uplifting the elevation of the self, but then, accepting the self back on a higher plane. The growth, the perpetual growth of this religion, our religious system, is that you're not negating the self, but you are in a relationship of growth by retaining the self.
And then your higher self you put right back into the relationship.
Correct. And it's you could call it a spiral. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, what a way to start, to end.
All right.
Thanks so much for listening. Bye.